Thank you very much, Professor Brett. Mr. Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, first let me assure all of you out there that you have heard the expert. I don't consider myself one in the field of advertising. I have some views. I'm going to express them, but as I listened to Mr. Johnson, I felt certain that there were questions in the back of your minds that neither one of us are going to be able to answer by standing here and talking to you. So as we think and wonder about integrating the Negro into maybe television or into our everyday life, you can ask either Mr. Johnson or myself questions about this, and we can, if possible, answer these questions during the question and answer period. I would like to say, first of all, that I just left San Francisco, and I find it to be a wonderful, sincere feeling of pleasure to be in the windy city of Chicago, sort of like a breath of fresh air for one who has just left the curiously free and open convention in the Cow Palace out there in San Francisco. Businessmen of enlightenment and understanding of goodwill have been traditionally the hope of our nation, and I certainly want to feel it personally that as I talk about businessmen, I am talking mainly about the advertising group at this particular session. But I say they have been the hope of our nation, and right now with the news from Harlem and with people talking about extremism being a virtue, this nation needs all the hope that it can get as far as I'm concerned. A lot of us are discouraged and disheartened. I say a lot of us. I don't happen to be in that group. They're pessimistic about the undercurrents and the upheavals which are disturbing our society today. While I am not disheartened, I certainly share the concerns of those who want to see America, who do not want to see America become so divided and chaotic that we place our internal position and our national health in jeopardy. Yes, I share the concerns, but certainly I don't think any of us should be discouraged. The darker the clouds seem to appear today on all horizons, the more it makes me realize that we have a country worth fighting for and sacrificing for, a country which we are not going to allow to fall into the hands of either the extremists of the left or the extremists of the right. Now, someone once said that democracy is a matter of us getting ahead without leaving any one of us behind. It's precisely in that kind of philosophical frame of mind which I'm going to share some of my thoughts with you. Now, I'm sure that some of you may not agree with me, but I've never worked for nor desired the reputation of saying things simply to please. If I can't say the things that I believe, then I prefer not saying them at all, but certainly I don't want any of you to get me wrong. I'm not as humble as this statement sounds. I have no intention of keeping my mouth shut when I sincerely believe we are moving away from those ideals which America was founded. The reason I feel that way is because it just so happens that this is my country too. And I have a stake in this democracy just as you have a stake. In fact, I believe the business community of America has a rich and a valuable stake in the health and growth of this nation. That's why it is my conviction that it is correct and proper and compelling for businessmen to lead, and I mean lead with bold creativity and courageous enlightenment in these days of turmoil and tumult. I do not believe that the American businessman up until this time has demonstrated the kind of leadership regarding our domestic crisis which he owes to his own enterprise, to his nation's economy, and to his fellow man. By and large, the business world has tended to view the social unrest in the country in somewhat of a negative fashion. The businessman has viewed with alarm the new aggression of the marching Negro. He has entertained fears and apprehensions, And I suggest that the time has come for him to go forward with all the courage and persuasion and determination with which in the past he has helped make this country a front runner in the world of commerce. If the American businessman takes this initiative, it's my belief that he will become one of the most effective influences in bringing about a working relationship among all of our people, both black and white, which can ensure our economy not only peace, but also justice on the racial front. This peace and justice must be won if we are to prosper as a nation and to continue to hold and to improve our status of leadership in the free world and competition with that portion of the world which is not free. Recognition of the hopes and desires, the legitimate and reasonable aspiration of 20 million black Americans is inevitable. And it is a wise man who recognizes and deals with the inevitable. Few men, and I say this in all sincerity, would question that the day must surely come when the content, the character, and not skin color will be the measure of a man in the worlds of labor, of business, and of government. Shall we allow this dawn of freedom to break only after a terrible and brutal strife and dislocation of our lives as we live them? Or will we march forward to meet this dawn and give something of ourselves in order to help it to come into being? To do the former is to deny those very foundations upon which America is built. To do the latter is to walk with dignity toward our true destiny as a country. Whenever I consider the telling role which business can play in the field of racial justice, I think of Birmingham, and no one could contend that Birmingham has become a model city. No one could argue honestly that all the problems of the Steel City has been solved. Yet progress has been made in an area of fair employment. Progress has been made in the recognition of the dignity of the human personality, whether that personality belongs to men of black or white skin. Most important, in a community where there was no dialogue between citizens of differing skin color, the lines of communication have been open and the dialogue is in progress. This in a city where white men once refused even to talk to Negroes about their problems is certainly a giant step. And who was responsible for this? I feel in the ultimate analysis it was the business leadership of this deep South city under the most unfavorable and tense conditions found the way to make peace with those who were spearheading the Negro protest. It was not the state government, the city government, the religious leaders or civic leaders who moved to bring a halt to the dangerous and seemingly hopeless stalemate between what Negroes wanted and what Bull Connor and Governor Wallace didn't want them to have. It was, I repeat, business leadership. So distinct was the role of business in effecting a truce that the late President Kennedy singled out the city's top businessmen for praise once the agreement in Birmingham had been signed. Under the leadership of the President of the Chamber of Commerce, meetings were held for 3 consecutive days, one of them lasting a full day and night. Here were people who had to meet in secret, sitting down in conference to solve 2 dramatically conflicting points of views. And this happened, I must emphasize, in a city which has been called the worst city in America in terms of race relations. It happened at the height of a crisis, in an atmosphere of a few hot breaths removed from lynching. Yet a pact was made between reasonable men. And I can't help but think how much easier it would be and much more sensible it would to resolve our racial problems before demonstrations occur, before the picketing, before violence erupts, before we have been backed into corners and have no alternatives. I am not saying here that the business community should integrate workforces and extend all recognition to the Negro simply as a means of averting trouble. This would be the negative approach. I'm saying that there is a positive approach and a positive reason for taking it. Mr. Johnson of the publisher and founder of the Johnson Magazine, Ebony and Jet and others has done more, in my view, than any other single man in America to demonstrate American industry the meaning of that positive approach. The positive approach is that racial justice in business is good business. Mr. Johnson's publication called it to the attention of our economy. They let it be known that we are no beggar standing at the door of American society with a tin cup in our hands. We are 20 million strong with about $25 billion to spend. Johnson Publication not only made industry aware of this, but also has helped make the Negro aware himself that this spending power of ours can and should be channeled, not merely to punish those who fail to recognize and respect us, but to reward those who offer us decency and fair play as they accept our money. Someone has commented on the power of the consumer in this area. He said that every human being has a vote every time he makes a purchase. No one is disenfranchised on account of age, sex, race, religion, education, and illegal residence or failure to register. Every day is election day, and moreover, minorities count. Now, this is true, and I wonder when in these sensitive areas of television and advertising we're going to recognize that it's true. You know, as I leaf through the pages of the American major newspapers and magazines, I note that seemingly there are no brown-skinned babies being made comfortable by the soothing talcum powders. Now, I say seemingly because every once in a while we see a brown or a black face appear on television, but we don't see often enough men of dark hue finding superiority in one type of shirt or in another. No Negro housewife delighting in the use of this or that detergent. This gives one the utterly false, untrue, and unjust view of the real American life. With all the lovely and handsome Negro models which the Johnson Publication again has showcased for the world, somehow the major advertising agencies, the big-time sponsors, do not see fit to incorporate these attractive and sales-attracting people into their advertising. In television, there is not one major series which stars any one of the many wonderful Negroes we have in the field of entertainment, such as a Duke Ellington or a Harry Belafonte or perhaps a Sidney Poitier, who became the first Negro to win an Academy Award. And I think it's fairly common knowledge that I have a deep respect for a man who runs the state of New York. And this respect is not merely for the knowledge that Governor Rockefeller and his family have done a great deal for Negro education and advancement throughout the years, nor for the families and the governor's generous gifts to Negro churches and organizations and civil rights causes. It is not attributable only to the statements that the governor is making constantly about human dignity and democracy for all people. Many of the contributions the governor has made to human decency has never been publicized. He once made the statement that the face of a Negro child on television is more valuable to the cause of decency than a score of civil rights speeches. And he has done something about this through the New York State's Commission on Human Rights. He assigned a George Norford, who used to work for NBC, to go and work with the Human Rights Commission and worked out a plan and program so that in New York, at least, more and more faces appear on television. There's a story that has been told about Mrs. Martin Luther King, and I want to give it to you in her own words, as she wrote it in the June issue of the Good Housekeeping magazine. Mrs. King relates an experience with her 8-year-old daughter, Yolanda Denise. Here are Mrs. King's words. At times, Yolanda's questioning thoughts about colored-white relationships have made her doubt her value as a Negro. She startled me one day by announcing that white people are prettier than colored people. Oh no, that isn't true, I said emphatically. There are pretty people and others not so attractive in all groups. No, mommy, she insisted, white people are just pretty and colored people are ugly. Luckily, I remember that I had some copies of Ebony magazine in my room. Yolanda and I looked through them together and saw many good-looking Negro models. Isn't she pretty, I would say, or isn't he handsome? Yolanda exclaimed enthusiastically. And when we had finished, she was really impressed. In fact, she was so impressed that she now declares flatly that colored people are prettier than whites. Mrs. King concludes this incident with this observation, and I quote again, "I had to start all over again." I feel that this story illustrates the dilemma of the Negro parent in today's society. With the Negro appearing only as guest on television house with the glass curtain shutting out the Negro almost as rigidly as the iron curtain shuts out freedom-loving folk, with magazine and newspaper advertising constantly appearing and ignoring the existence of the Negro consumer. Our children begin to wonder about their own values. When we strive to reassure them and give them a sense of what Dr. King calls somebody-ness, we must be so careful that we do not allow them to exaggerate this as a sense of false black security, which would be as damaging as a false sense of black inferiority. Business in this nation owes it to itself and to its fellow man to be more honest and just in the protection of the American scene, so that it tells the truth instead of presenting only the picture. Mrs. King's daughter and her sons, and my daughter and my sons, will one day share the responsibility with your children for the conduct of this nation and its role in the world. Therefore, we must take these forward steps, not only because to do so is good business, but also we are worth little if this were in this world if we are not striving to fashion a better world for our children. I am reminded of John Ruskin's marvelous challenge along these lines when he said, quote, "When we build, let us think that we build forever. Let it not be for our present delight, nor for present use alone. Let it be such work as our descendants will thank us for, and let us think, as we lay stone on stone, that a time is to come when those stones will be held sacred because our hands have touched them, and that men will say, as they look upon the labor and rough substance of them, see, this is what our fathers did for us." Now, I want to say in conclusion that I certainly consider this a wonderful honor and a pleasure to be here before you. As I pointed out, I am certainly not, and you know more about that now, an expert in this field. But I do feel that we are certainly at a time of real challenge. And I think men and women in the positions that you hold can do a great deal to help preserve the dignity of our country. I pointed out at the start that I just left San Francisco, and I've been attempting, as we've been going east, to read as much as I possibly can on where we're heading. And I sincerely believe that if we really intend to remain in the position of world leadership, that the business world, people like yourselves, have to stand up and be counted. I think we're really at the crossroads. And I think you must understand why the Harlems, you must understand why the disturbances, and why people are so upset and going off in what some people call a very, very dangerous area. I am concerned more about this because as I talk to youngsters of my color, they are very much concerned with the atmosphere today, and the feeling is that unless people stand up and be counted, they will have to take the necessary action and stand up as men. I hope that in this meeting that each of us will go home dedicated to the building of a much stronger nation, understanding that none of us can be really free until all of us are truly free. And I feel that the people such as yourself can take the lead, do the necessary job, and I think through the medium of television, through the advertising media, to the agencies who wield this and this industry with such an iron hand, it's amazing to me how the agencies can go to a sponsor and tell them, you do it this way, and they follow them regardless of whether they like it or not. So I feel that you have a wonderful opportunity to lead America by the kinds of demonstrations that you show on television, by the atmosphere that this media creates. And I know that by working together and understanding the ambitions and the desires of all of the people here, we can meet this challenge and the crisis that we face without really going through the kinds of problems in every Harlem here in America, such as what's happening in the Harlem in New York. I want to thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. Now, can you stay up and I'll bring John up?